Pickaxe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Triforce podcast. We're recording this on the very last day of 2020.
Of the very worst year of our lives.
Yeah.
Pretty bad one.
I feel like people were saying that about 2019. At the end of 2019, people were like, God, what a shit year. It feels like it's something that's been happening again and again. And suddenly people think 2021, suddenly it's going to tick over. And everything's going to be fine.
Well, that's the whole...
But that's kind of not how the world works, is it?
I know what you mean about 2019, but 2020, I think, categorically has been far worse.
No, I agree. I mean, I think people were expecting 2020 to be a good one.
And yeah. It's...
I mean, did you guys remember the Australian fires? Did you remember the fires in Australia at the start of this year? When the whole country was like an apocalyptic wasteland and there was just thick smoke? I had completely forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I watched this... Death to 2020,
yes,
which is the
we were just talking about it.
It's Charlie Brooker's screen wipe or whatever. He used to do it every year on BBC.
Yeah.
And obviously, since he's been doing Black Mirror and being out in America, I think he's gotten a bit more, I don't
budget.
Know.
Budget.
Respect, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Because that was always a great show. And yeah, I recommend it on Netflix. I watched it yesterday. I really liked
it. I'll have to watch that. I haven't watched
it. It is worth a watch. Yeah, it's worth a
watch. Yeah, surprisingly, it's quite good. But yeah, that was this year, unbelievably. The Australia on fire. Well, you know, it's minus two, according to my phone outside. It's freezing cold this morning.
Yeah, it is a cold one today, for sure.
We missed a week of Triforce Podcast last week because Pyrion was ill.
Ill.
Yes.
Very, very, very ill. I had the Rona. I actually had the Rona. I got tested. Mrs. F and I got tested on, I think, the 21st or something like that. And
so this was after your kid was being held at home, remember, though? Because
yes, so she was sent home. Her entire year was sent home from school a week early from what would have been the end of term because a bunch of kids in her year tested positive.
On the bus,
or people
yeah,
in their house did. So I was like, all right. So we went home. So she came home and we kept the youngest home because we thought, what's the point? And also, you know, if our eldest is at risk of spreading it, then she will have given it to the youngest and she would also be at risk. So we just kept them both home for the last week of school. They were like, this is great. And then subsequently, I got the sort of scratchy throat. If you remember, I think when we recorded, I had a bit of a wobbly throat. And everybody in my, when I was streaming, everyone in chat was like, oh, he's got the COVID, because it's kind of a meme. And I was like, shut the fuck up. I don't have COVID.
Yeah.
I don't have a fever. I don't have a cough. I don't, you know, I haven't lost my sense of taste or smell. Nothing. I'm fine. Subsequently, it turned out either that was the start of it, which I suspect, or I caught it a few days after that. But either way,
right.
I had it. It was the sickest I've ever been. And I had the Chinese flu before, which I thought was the sickest it's possible to be. I was well wrong. It is much easier to be an awful lot sicker. And it was so fucking horrible that even thinking about it
it's weird,
actually
though,
gives me a cold sweat.
With people who vape and just vaping in general, like when I used to vape, I remember not having much of a sense of taste or smell. So it's like it's kind of like those are the sort of early warning signs that maybe you've got it.
Right.
And
you just kind of don't notice it, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't really notice, right? If you're an active vapist.
But I'll tell you what, you think you don't have a good sense of taste or smell, but when you actually lose it, it is such an eerie sensation. When I was in the depths of it, like really sick, I had sort of feverish patches So I always think of a fever as being like your head is hot and maybe your body is hot and you'll go hot and cold and hot and cold and you feel lousy. This was like my entire body ached. All my organs ached. My back was killing me all the time.
Oh,
and
man.
I had these burning patches. Like my kidneys were red hot. My lungs felt awful.
I'm not even sure where my kidneys are, but I like the idea.
They're just back there. Just if you reach around the back.
Zach knows. His were, it was like, it was like on E.T. He was like, you could see them glowing red through his skin.
It was literally like, but in patches. So part of me is normal. Part of me is red hot. So I was just lying in bed. There was a 3-day period where I didn't eat. I didn't drink as much as I should have because it made me feel ill to drink anything. It hurt to move in any way. So I just lay there. I didn't do it. I couldn't watch anything, couldn't listen to anything. I was just literally lying there.
The nice little things that I heard about describing was if someone put a 50-pound note on your windowsill, you wouldn't get up to
pick it up. No, you wouldn't. You absolutely would not.
That's how bad you feel. And the other thing is, like, all of the stuff that normally works as a distractor, like, normally when you're... Like when you watch a movie or something or TV show or something you like, you quite quickly like, bam, you're in it, right? When you're very sick, you can't get into that. Like you can watch your favorite movie for 10 minutes and just be sick of it.
Yeah.
You know,
do anything. I tried listening to podcasts.
It's really weird.
Couldn't stand it. So I just lay in my room. And also because I was in so much pain, like actual physical pain all the time, I couldn't sleep. So I would sleep for an hour and then wake up because I was in agony to have to turn over a tiny bit, which hurts and wipes you out. I'd have a bit of something to drink, take some more drugs, and then just try to go back to sleep. And I would just lay there. And you know when they talk, it's so stupid. This is so stupid. When people talk about being in solitary confinement and how, because my family were just leaving me to it, which is fair enough. I was just upstairs, just moaning. They left me to it and I was there. There was a good 36 to 48 hour period where I was sleeping maybe an hour at a time for 2 days and just literally unable to do anything, completely immobilized. And my brain was just trying to entertain itself in some way. So I was imagining conversations.
I shouldn't be laughing.
No, it was awful.
At this because it's horrible. But yeah,
it's funny now, but it was so bad. But I was just imagining movie sequences. Like, you know that bit in Aliens? When Ripley comes back out of quarantine, or out of they rescue her from the pod, and she's having to explain to the corpos about what happened and the alien. So you're telling me that you found an alien that has concentrated acid for blood, you know, that bit. That
right.
Verbatim in my head replayed that entire scene, because my brain was just like, let's just think of something, you know, and then like some scene from The Matrix, and then some conversation I'd had when I was like 12 suddenly reappeared in my brain.
It's almost like you were in solitary confinement or something.
Did
in
you
prison
not hear me
and your
say
mind
that?
Was just, yeah, sorry, okay. by which I mean like that feverishness.
Yeah.
It's kind of this horrible, obviously really makes us not want to get sick.
Don't.
Oh, God.
Man.
Do not get corona. Listen to me, kids out there. I know there's this app called Vibe. I don't know if it's in America or if it's over here, where you arrange, like, be a rebel, have a party. Don't.
Oh, my God, what?
Don't. Do not get corona. It's fucking horrible. Don't do it. And the first thing I thought when I had it was, if my mum had this, I'm not kidding, I think it would finish her off 100%. She is old.
Well, me too. Like, I went to my grandmother's funeral this week.
Sorry,
and
buddy. I shouldn't have said that.
No, it's totally fine. My dad just had the jab as well, actually, his first jab. So, because he's 80, my dad, so he's in the vulnerable range. And my mum and him are obviously, the whole family is very protective of him. And so we're really sort of like, oh, you know, he's the one who's at risk. So we're not sure whether, you know, and I think it's quite restricting because my parents used to be quite, I don't know, like, they feel like, since my dad's 80, it's like, let's make the most of things and do stuff, you know. And I think they've been quite annoyed in the last 6 months because they've been trapped inside. It's meant they've not been as active as they normally could be, you know, physically. And I think that is detrimental to elderly people too. You need to try and keep active and stuff. And so they have done a little bit of trying to walk every day and stuff. But, you know, when you're trapped in the same place, it's hard.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
difficult,
even,
yeah.
You know, going out anywhere feels like a little bit of a risk when it's kind of, you know, out there. And so I think it's quite scary for these folks, you know. I don't know. I feel a bit sorry. Anyway, it was a very nice funeral, actually.
Good.
Not very many of us there because we don't have that many big of a family anyway, really.
Yeah, I guess with restrictions and stuff, it's a bit weird for getting people together and stuff anyway.
I think it was a bit stressful for my mum because she sort of felt like she was organizing it, and it wasn't quite, it didn't quite go to plan. Like, they played the wrong music at the start, and then it sort of overran a bit, and so they had to cut one of the readings, and then another sort of, they played the wrong music at the end, and so my mum was a little bit unhappy.
What songs did they play?
Well,
AC/DC or something, just accidentally.
I think it was just they pressed the wrong button, or they Googled up a song and just it was the wrong version of it or something. You know what I mean?
Fuck is it? You get given two songs, you play the songs.
I know.
Honestly.
I think it was all just a bit poorly.
But I bet nobody said anything.
My mum said something at the time as well. Okay. She was quite stroppy at the time. But,
good.
But I think she was also a little bit upset. And sort of, I think everyone else thought it was fine and didn't really notice. I think one of the reasons it sort of overran was because my dad sort of talked a little bit about how he knew my nan. And it's interesting how you don't realize necessarily how other people know other people, right? And so I think for a period of time when Nana had just sort of gone in after my granddad had died, and after she'd kind of moved to a smaller flat nearer to where my parents were, my mum and dad sort of regularly visited her every, you know, a couple of times a week to bring her supplies and help her out and do stuff. And so my dad ended up actually sort of spending quite a bit of time with her. They read the paper together, and so they talk about certain things, and she'd always try and, like, not exactly bait him, but kind of like, you know, see if she could get him to get his opinion out on something, you know. And so they had this kind of odd friendship that blossomed, and, you know, they played a lot of Scrabble together. And I think that it was nice to hear how she had, you know, been a part of his life from a different point of view. Because to me, you know, as someone who, you know, I moved across the country, and so I didn't see her for a few years. But before that, when I was at home and when I come back from uni and when I didn't have a job, I sort of took on the role of going and seeing her every week. So there was this period of 2 or 3 years when I got to know my Nana very well and became sort of friends with her. So it was, I think each of us kind of has our own positive memories of this person in our family, who I guess none of us knew, you know, super well, but each of us knew a different part of her, you know, because my mum and her sort of bonded a bit on flowers in her garden and things like this. Anyway, it was a very nice event. It snowed like crazy.
Wow.
Just the skies opened and it just absolutely snowed.
Where was it snowing? Where did you have to go for this?
So it was only an hour on the train up from, so I took the train from Bristol to Cheltenham.
How busy was the train?
Well, fuck, no one. No one was on it. So it was
well,
it was
fuck,
on,
fuck, no one.
No one. It was like, it was the 28th of December. And so, yeah, obviously everyone's off work.
Yeah.
Anyway, but,
and locked down.
But the train was empty, but you can't sit next to anyone. They've got each of the, you can only sit on the inside seats, you know, the window seats. There's no aisle seats. And the trains were running a very limited service anyway. And so it was like kind of a very strange
time.
Trip overall.
Gosh.
Yeah, I think traveling and doing anything at this time, so weird.
You know what? It is weird. It is very weird. But I'm also kind of impressed with the level of organization in managing all of this shit in a weird way. Like when we went for our COVID test, which you have to do yourself. I thought someone would do it, but they hand you a bag with all the bits in. It's like a little test yourself kit. And you know what? We had to go to this place. It was on a university campus over near Teddington Lock. Anyone in the area will know it. And there's like a tent. And the first thing I thought of is, if this was a video game, this would be the zombie sequence where you have to go into some big medical tent and there's all evidence of people desperately trying to save people and then turning into zombies, right? That was literally what it looked like.
Yeah, there's like a whole load of bodies lined up
along
the floor.
Right, it's piled up and a load of yellow bags with the toxic symbol. That's what it looked like.
Oh my God.
So you go in there and there's all these little booths that they've built and the instructions are printed on the wall and they hand you this plastic bag with all these things in. And there's a lady there who stands and directs you. Open your bag. And you open the bag. And then she goes, remove the little pointy thing. And you take out this long piece of plastic with a piece of cotton at the end. You have to, and then it says, now you have to swab your tonsils. Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to poke yourself at the very back of the throat. It's really fucking horrible. Believe
when
me.
When I was younger, I was more able to.
Every day.
Well, let me tell you something. I have a newfound respect for the ladies and gentlemen that manage that in any of those pornographic movies, because how they don't just vom instantly.
Oh, my God. If I brush my tongue, I'm like gagging. So right. I don't know how like somebody gets like a big monster horse cock in there.
For realsies.
Mouth
but this,
and throat
this is just a little
it.
Piece of plastic. So you have to jab the back of your tonsils. They give you a little mirror and you're like, gah! Yeah. Like that. And then you have to hoik that up your nose. And it says poke it up there until you feel resistance. And I'm thinking, instantly, I don't want to put this up my nose. Does that count as resistance? But it doesn't. You have to jab yourself at the back of the nose. It makes your eyes water.
You shouldn't be overdoing it, I'm guessing. But then again, you do want to get a nice DNA sample.
A good solid sample. Once you did that, then you snap it off and put it in this little test tube with this liquid in. Put it in this bag and then seal it up. And then there's the tiny little rubbish bag for all the leftover bits. I was like, this is impressive. Yeah, and then the very next day, you get the result. And they were like, yeah, you've got the Rona. I was like, fuck. And then they call you up to see how you are. They're like, how are you? I was like, fucking awful. And then they call you again, like 7 or 8 days later. How are you? Like, much better. They're like, good. And then it's all recorded and any problems.
Oh my
and I was
God.
Like, wow, it was impressive.
I feel bad. Okay. I would just like to preface by saying I feel bad because... I have like related stories to all of your big stories today, but like at
what,
the same time,
are you going to try and one up them all?
No, I really don't want to.
Don't feel bad. This podcast is just about hearing what you guys have been doing.
There's no thunder.
It's been
a busy two weeks.
We got lots to go.
Okay,
through,
listen.
So
okay,
just
so
get started.
Flax. Sit. My son had to have the same test because he was around somebody who tested positive for Corona. Thank God he didn't test positive.
None
of us have gotten it. This is very good for us at this point in time for a reason I'll explain in a minute. Secondly, okay. Lewis, I'm so sorry that your nan passed away. I would also like to say that my grandma... passed away two nights ago.
Oh, my God!
I know.
Holy crap.
But it's not... I wasn't as close to my grandmother as you are to your nan. And as sad as it is and everything, she was like 95 years old. And she lived a really good life. And she wasn't like very sick leading up to passing away or anything. She was like on palliative care for like a day. But before that, she was like... she was totally with it. She was fine, everything. But she was just very old. And she passed away. But I don't know what they're going to do for a funeral or anything because in Canada, the lockdown's different. It's a lot more strict where my parents are and stuff like that. So I don't know what's going to happen.
I think there's I actually went to another funeral this month, but
good
it was on
God,
Zoom.
God, lads.
I know. Well, that's my last grandparent. All my grandparents are gone.
Oh, sorry,
now.
Dude.
It's that point in your life you get to, I guess, when the generation before the last one is pretty much
gone,
right?
Yeah.
Same with my wife's side. No grandparents left.
Yeah, I will say attending it in person better.
Yeah, you get closure, I guess, right?
I think I felt a lot more, I don't know, like I was a lot sadder than I thought I'd be. You know, I went in thinking, oh, you know, this is a celebration. You know, this is part of life.
Yeah.
And stuff. But I got quite tearful. Actually.
Yeah.
The worst thing for me because I all of Maddie's grandparents died. I met them all. She didn't meet any of mine. They'd all died before we met, unfortunately. But for all my grandparents, for some reason, died an awful lot younger than hers. All of her grandparents, I met them all. They were all lovely. And we buried them all, which was, you know, it is horrible. For me, it's even though if it was someone I wasn't that close to, there's something about seeing that box, that very final moment when you see a box that has a person in. It's horrible. It's very emotional. Very emotional.
Yeah. So I'm sorry to hear about that, Sips. And what I'm saying is, you know, you may well have memories. You know, something might trigger your memory.
Childhood
you might
memories.
Think that was
I
nice
spent
time.
Summers out there when I was
from
a
in
kid
Canada,
and stuff.
From when you
yeah,
were living
when I was
in Canada.
Yeah. But I haven't. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen her because obviously she lives very far away. She lives like close to where my parents live, which is in the middle of nowhere on the west coast of Canada. So it's not like it hasn't been. I'm sad, but like it's not devastating or anything.
Yeah.
Like I think you were a lot closer to your nan and your family in general. So it's like, it's probably hit you a lot harder. And like I said, I don't want to like steal your thunder or anything. It's just,
it's not a related thing.
But I would also like to say that it just shows how beautiful life really is when you think about it, because your nan has passed away. My grandmother's passed away. They were old. And it's like life just has this way, right? Because like some older people have passed away, and inside my wife's stomach right now is new life forming.
Are you serious,
we're having a third.
Are you serious?
I swear. Yeah, we just had the scan today.
Oh my God, congratulations.
I couldn't go to it because of COVID, but yeah, it's
oh my God.
We're having another
baby.
You fool. I know.
You fool.
Yeah, fool.
Did you plan to have a third baby?
Yeah, planned.
Oh, it's amazing,
dude. So she's...
Is that why all this loft conversion and stuff is something you guys are cracking on with? Was this a
it was kind of like part of the plan, right? It was like, well, we want to have another one, but you know, if we can have, like, you know, we're like a little bit older, we weren't sure like if it was possible or whatever, but we were like, you know, okay, let's, well, we're gonna try anyway and see. And
Detective P-Flax strikes again.
The loft conversion is a dead giveaway.
Well, yeah, but we were just kind of like, if nothing happens on that front, then at least we have this converted loft that we can make into a games room or whatever.
Right.
But now it looks like my son or daughter is going
to move up there.
And we're going to have another baby. So
That's very bizarre, because Sips, my cousin is also pregnant at the, and that's to happen, been announced this week. So it's strangely, it's a new life.
We're like kind of in sync, strangely.
There's some
like
kind of, I wonder if the power cosmic, of the Triforce,
maybe.
That triangle is a magical
maybe.
Thing.
Yeah,
three
yeah.
sides in balance, three sides forever joined in harmonious balance.
So well, my dad took me aside, you see, and said to me,
son,
oh, you know,
it's all triangles.
Son, your cousin's pregnant, and let me tell you, it's not mine. Kind of weird, I know, but
just want to emphasize that not mine.
Well, he sort of said to me, you know, he started off by saying, "Well, you got good brain, Lewis," and I was like, "Where's this going?"
So he's lying right from the outset, is what you're saying.
And it would be a shame if, you know, you weren't to pass that, you know, good brain down to some possible future.
So he's pitching the idea to you of having kids from a this is for the species kind of thing. He's saying, listen, Lewis, for the sake of humanity, you must procreate. That's his
pitch. He'd obviously considered how to bring it up with me, because my brother hasn't had any kids in his marriage, and so I'm the, you know, the surviving Brindley.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the future of the Brindley line. And so I looked at him and I said, like, well, you know, I'm not sure that's how it works anyway. You know, I don't think that that's necessarily something that's passed on in that sense. But
it definitely is. You'll notice your kids are very much like you. And the things that they are interested in are things that you're interested in. And but there are also things that you are really interested in, but they don't give a shit about. They're their own people. But there are definitely things that you think, that's just like me. That is really just like me, the way they're interested in those things. And for you, I think you are a smart guy. I mean, look, you know, you've done a lot, in my opinion. You've done a fantastic amount. Even just if you're talking about the Jingle Jam, if you look at that, $20 million raised, that in itself is an achievement that 99.9% of people in the world will never manage. So I think you've done some really good things.
And that's
you should
very kind
be proud
of that. To say, but I don't think that's enough of a reason for me to.
I think
to
it
bring...
is. I'm with Brindley Senior on this one.
Right.
Start cranking out.
I think
kids.
There's a lot of
Planet
factors.
Needs more you Brindleys. Need... I didn't think I'd ever say that. But it's
honestly,
true.
Like because it's like a fresh topic, because like we're, you know, expecting another child and stuff, and like and having had two children, and I'm sure Flax can agree with this. There's really nothing in this world like holding your own child. Like it's beautiful. Like the connection
is an incredible thing.
It's just an incredible thing. And it's like, if you can have kids, you should. I mean, it's not like, don't get bogged down with all this. Oh, it's irresponsible to have children in the world. Like every generation has had that. Like you hear people saying that in like the 60s and everything. But honestly, like we have this ability to do this like incredible thing. While we're here in the short, very short time that we're here. And I would say to you that if you can do it, you should do it. It is amazing. Like, it's work, but it's the best work. Like,
it's the best work. Yeah,
there's nothing like it. You'll never have an experience like it. Like, you could seek out experiences like your whole life, but actually creating your own person and holding them and then helping them grow into a bigger person and stuff is the most incredible thing.
No, that's agreed. I mean, that it all sounds amazing. You're selling it to me. Where can I sign up? How do I create one?
Well first you need to get a lady.
Yeah.
Well, this is the issue, right?
Your pee-pee goes in her hoof.
Really, I'd say less than 60% of the work is mine, right?
No, well, I mean, you're still a vital component.
Yeah. You are? I mean, obviously, and this is obviously, you know, this is a men's rights podcast.
I'm the spark plug.
The ladies do most of the work.
She's the engine.
You're the spark plug.
Yeah.
You're a bit more than that. Are you more like whatever the fuel injector thing is? I don't know how cars work.
No, we don't know anything about cars. This is a manly podcast.
This is a manly man's podcast.
We're the warbling flange.
You're the injecting. And, you hard inject the turbo juice.
That's right. You gotta get that your man piston. Pancake.
You know those bits
in the
faster and more furious movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know when they frown or they scowl and they look at the other guy and the person nods and then you push a button and you hear a and the car goes. That's your role.
Yeah.
And then you Tokyo drifts. She Tokyo drifts a baby out. Boom. Yeah. Job done.
Think about this.
Lewis. You're always talking about how the human race needs to do better, right?
Yeah.
And we need to improve and stuff. Your child, Brindley Jr., or anybody listening to this, your children will be the ones to do amazing things that maybe you haven't done.
I don't know.
Maybe they'll do a better Jingle Jam than you one day.
You can never predict that, though, and you can never plan for it.
Right.
I think you've got to hope for it. They're an independent, any more than you can control.
But you don't need to be set on that either, though. You just sort of take it as it comes. You know, they come out, you think one thing, and then, you know, you're slapped with the reality of the situation and you're, perspective changes and stuff, and it's spicy, right? It keeps you on your toes.
I know I joke about all of this stuff, but I'm in complete agreement with you too. I think if it had fallen right for me and I'd been in the right place for it with the right person, I think it would be easy, right?
Well, but
I think
that, you're lucky. That
it's not only my decision, and it's not only
that's true.
And it's a difficult. Is it hard? I feel like a child still. I feel like I'm completely immature.
You know what, Lewis? We all feel like children until we have a child.
Even when you have children, you still act like a child.
You do still feel like a big kid.
Yeah.
But now you're forced to be responsible and grow up and be considerate.
And
try to teach people. But honestly, I know that people listening to this who haven't got kids or don't want kids or hate children will think, I fucking hate it when people who have kids go on about them like they've achieved something fucking amazing. All you give about fucking
yeah,
kids.
But just remember, all you people who feel like that, somebody has felt like that about you at some point.
Exactly. And you honestly can't understand.
Unless you descended from the sky, which you probably didn't.
Or your parents hate you.
Or your parents absolutely hate you. But at some point, I think somebody felt like some joy to bring you into this world. Maybe even if it was just,
fleeting.
Fleeting.
Well, the other thing about waiting longer is that, it's going to be harder for you to have grandchildren, right? And so I sort of looked at my dad and I said, you know, people in glass houses, because he didn't have me until he was 45.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's I've got 8 years till I hit the limit.
No, that's not even the limit. For males, it's different. For women, there's definitely like a time thing, like a cutoff point. But I mean, if you are an older guy and you are with a younger woman, you could still feasibly have children. Like,
look at Trump. He's got an eight year old kid, he's like
almost 80 years old. Exactly.
I mean, Jeff Goldblum's just had a kid, I think, and he's about fucking,
it's not
imagine I, Jeff it's, Goldblum it's, being your dad.
It's odd,
that would be so
but
weird.
It's doable, like, I mean, if you were actually worried about that kind of stuff, but I mean, you're a young guy, like,
you're a young buck in
just
great
a
shape.
Little young
I'm not gonna have children at 70. No, you're mad, but no. I'm not gonna do that.
Jeff Goldblum's 70.
Like, think of how much changes in 1 year. Like, you're not even 40 yet. You
is
never know.
Really? Jeff Goldblum is 68?
Yeah.
God.
His wife's my age.
Good God, he's 68. I suppose he has been around for fucking ever.
Yeah, he has, to be fair. He's been around a long time.
Before we carry on, the Triforce podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Thank you very much to them. You can get 3 months free if you visit expressvpn.com/Triforce. We all connect to the internet via ISPs. I don't personally trust those guys with my data. They log all of your internet activity, and often maybe they don't even have any control over what they do with it. You can install ExpressVPN on your computer or phone. It's a simple app that encrypts all of your network data and tunnels it through a secure VPN server so your ISP can't see any of your activity. It doesn't slow your connection and you wouldn't even know it's there. So stop handing over your personal data to ISPs and other tech giants who mine your activity and sell off your information. Protect yourself with the VPN I trust to keep me private online. Visit expressvpn.com/Triforce. That's expressvpn.com/Triforce to get 3 extra months free right now. Thank you very much.
By the way, been watching some movies over the
lockdown. Yeah.
And the misery. So yeah.
Okay, let's move on from funerals, babies, and
four weddings, four funerals, and childbirth announcement.
Well, yeah. Because
wait, before we move on though, this will be the first time that we've had a baby in the summer months. Baby's due in July.
Okay.
Both of my kids are October and December babies, so colder months.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to not having to wrestle with a newborn into like a snowsuit to keep them warm and stuff.
Yeah.
When leaving the hospital and other really annoying things about newborns.
And you've got AC, so it won't even be bad in the house, right?
In the garage, I've got AC, yeah.
Oh, I thought you had it in the house.
But that's okay. There's, if I clear all the junk out of here, there's plenty of room for pacing and getting rid of the colic and
you know what?
Rocking the baby to sleep in the
just,
AC.
Just maybe put the crib right next to Terry.
Yeah.
Terry can keep an eye on the baby.
Terry can, that's true. Actually, yeah, put Terry to work. He's just loafing around all the time, sleeping and fucking, you know, just eating up all of my dandelions.
To colic. It's like, I'm not. For the colic.
There's plenty to not look forward to. Let's
rough.
Be clear. It is rough, but
the first year is very rough.
Yeah.
Everyone I know has had a third. Everyone I know has had a third. The third baby is like a fucking breeze. You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the third baby is always just chill. Because if there's one thing that little kids love, it's watching slightly older kids.
Yeah.
It's like the most fascinating thing in the world for them. And they love watching the older.
I mean, my daughter grew up a lot quicker than my son because she had my son to run around after. And with the baby, she'll have, or he, will have, we don't know yet, by the way, it'll have my 5-year-old daughter and my 9-year-old son to run around after. So we'll probably be like fully in a business suit and ready for work within like 6 months.
So here's a question. Is this the first time that you told anybody about it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like family have known about it for like a couple of weeks.
So you haven't like told your stream or anything like that?
No, I haven't told anybody yet.
Honestly, I'm honest.
This is fresh news. This is this morning. Like
I'm honest.
We had the scan this morning. So
that's brilliant. So that's why you said you might be late.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Unfortunately, with COVID and stuff, I just couldn't go. So my wife had to go on her own, which is not great, but it was all good news and stuff. So everything's where it should be, and the baby was bopping around and stuff.
So fantastic. I've got to talk about detective stuff, right? Obviously, I really like watching all this detective murdery stuff. I've watched anything to do with it. I've watched it probably real life or playing it on a game. And me and Lydia used to do a stream where we played murder. And anyway, I was looking at, because every year at the end of the year, I look through for the top games of the 2020 and I try and play them all, right? So to try and like give me a little bit of new injection of new stuff. And so I was playing, so I looked up the Polygon top 50 games, right, of 2020, which was the thing they put together like a couple of weeks ago, right? And fuck me, it's a complete garbage list. I think it's total trash.
Well, like, okay, the games give me some examples.
Well, okay, so obviously guess what number one is, and it'll be fine. You'll be
Cyberpunk
able to guess
2077?
No, I don't think that's even on the list, but Hades is number one.
Hades,
on the list, which
okay.
is a great game.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed that when I played it. I don't know if it'd be number one. Animal Crossing's number two, and Microsoft Flight Simulator's number three.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that sounds all right.
Feels fine. And then number four is Final Fantasy VII Remake. Sure, again, whatever. They put like then it starts going weird, right? It's got a lot of games on here from console only, like Spider-Man, Miles Morales, which I haven't
played.
That's
the PS5 release, right?
Amazing. There's like, you know, it's got the obviously things on there, but on one of the ones on this list, and I think it's pretty early on, is this game called Murder by Numbers,
right?
And I was like, the fuck is this? And so I looked at it because I had it on my Steam library already, and it's a Picross game. Have you ever played Picross?
No.
It's like that. So I had a puzzle book the other day because my nan used to do these, going back to my nan, but she always used to get Puzzler, which is this magazine where you get a free pen and it's full of puzzles. And so I had one over Christmas because I thought it's quite nostalgic, you know. And I was enjoying going through it, doing all these stupid puzzles. Anyway, I played this game, and it's Picross. It's basically you get a grid, and it's got numbers, and the numbers tell you which blocks you're supposed to fill in. Anyway, it's like the because I've also done two jigsaw puzzles this Christmas.
Good God.
Wow.
And so I've done two jigsaw puzzles. I've played this. I've done Puzzler, and I'm fucking playing.
Oh, you're an old
game
man.
Play, which, you know, I thought it was going to be a murder mystery. I thought it was going to take me out of it. I thought it was going to be something actually good, but no, it was. It's this weird Picross thing with an anime story, and I was like, I was like, what the fuck am I playing? But then again, I'm actually quite into it. I like the I like it.
Right.
But I will say the other game I played about murder, which I sort of can recommend ish, is a game called A Hand with Many Fingers.
Right.
It wasn't on the top recommended list, but someone sent me a link to it. It's like £3. It's like about 2 hours long. And it's a game where you've got a crazy wall with all the pins, and you've got a file room with loads of boxes. And you have to go out, you have to like look through a file of facts, find like a reference to a file you want, go down to the basement, grab it, bring it back up, go through it, and stick the important bits on the wall and link them together on your crazy wall with pins. And it was really fun. So A Hand with Many Fingers. It's about the CIA. I liked it a lot. It was like 2 hours long. That's my little tip for this week, game-wise. But I haven't really done anything else other than Christmas. So,
man, I'll tell you what. You know what Christmas. I did a lot over the Christmas period?
Go on.
I played Jenga, which...
Did you?
Yeah.
That feels like something you could do for 10 minutes.
Well,
like, what do you mean?
Yeah, no, but my son got Jenga in his stocking and loves it. And so he's been like parading around the house saying he's the Jenga champion because nobody can beat him. And we've tried as well. Like, I've really tried. My wife has tried a couple of times as well. My daughter's hopeless. Like, she takes one block, the tower falls down, she starts to cry. But yeah, so we've just like our whole family has just played way too much Jenga.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. And that's because you can't possibly beat your son.
Yeah. And it takes me back to my youth in the 80s when I first heard about Jenga. I remember some friends having Jenga or whatever, but on TV at the time there was a commercial. It was a rap commercial for Jenga.
God. That was a thing. They used to do a lot of rap commercials.
And it went a little bit like this. You ready? It went Jenga, Jenga, Jenga. And then it goes, you take a block from the bottom and you put it on top. You take a block from the middle and you put it on top. That's how you make a tower. You just don't stop. And you kill the building on a box on top. I don't know all the lyrics, but it's anyway. Okay, you get this though, right? This jingle is like engraved in my mind from like 1986.
Well, apparently not the last verse, but yeah.
And it's something that comes back to me every once in a while without any prompting. So my son gets Jenga for Christmas. And all of a sudden in my mind, Jenga, I'm fucking singing this song. So, of course, I had to go on YouTube and find it and play it. And now my son, it just plays it on the iPad constantly. And then we're playing Jenga.
Oh, my God.
And my life has just become some sort of weird hell. So that's been
fun. It's like the Queen's Gambit.
Yeah.
He's now going to become like the world Jenga champion. This is his path you set him on. Do you see? This is the right age to start. Because this is the age that people like become piano prodigies or like StarCraft 2 prodigies or whatever. Like their parents introduced them to something. And this is the 9 years old or whatever is the age that they start because like getting obsessed with something they think they're really good
at.
Oh
my Lord.
And so this is the first step towards global
Jenga.
The global global dominance of the Sipsy
and
Jenga.
I think I'd rather him be impressively good at Tetris, because those guys get my respect. Right. Jenga?
I don't know, like, but Jenga's cool. It's
Son,
dexterous.
You're not going to play Jenga, you're going to play Tetris. No, Dad! I'm telling you, it's Jenga for me! No! No son of mine has played Jenga full time.
You take a block from the bottom and you put it, fuck you!
Stop
no.
singing, boys! Stop!
You can't control him. No, Tetris is the kind of thing like Mark Zuckerberg would be good at. Do you know what I mean? Or I think something like, I think like you tend to see like the more physical things like Rubik's Cube people being more dexterous, or at least like not being as nerdy. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like to be a Tetris champion, you literally have to have like the palest skin imaginable. You can see your kidneys, you know, just naturally kind of thing. You have to be evolved to like be a different life form.
Yeah.
To be good at those games, I think Tetris. It's I never clicked for me. In the same way that certain other things too didn't click.
You know, do you remember there was always a couple of kids at school who could solve the Rubik's Cube? Like, you could mess it up anyway and they would just go and solve it.
Yeah.
No, it always amazed me. But the weird thing is I can like everybody, I can solve one face of a Rubik's Cube. Happily, right?
I think there's some sort of mechanism.
It's a formula.
Which it will solve
I looked it up.
Right?
So,
which is amazing.
All of those kids looking back, they were either very, very good at maths and figured it out, because it is just a formula that you can do. So for each bit that you need to solve, for one thing, there are certain sides that are like true sides, so that when you solve it, you've got, you know, that is the correct side, because it should be this color and that color should be here. That's a good edge and everything like that, rather than you've sort of forced these two sides together and they're not, that's not the actual solution. So you won't be able to solve the cube. So that's a big part of it, is that there are certain colors that are meant to be next to each other in a certain sequence, and there are others that are not. So that's a big factor. And then how you solve it is a series of formula. So if you have a piece here and it needs to be moved up to this piece, you do this sequence and that'll move it into position. You just repeat these formula over and over again. Because of course, if you have a face that's solved and a face adjacent to it that also needs to be solved, which is of course the case, you can't solve that other face if that means messing up the solved one. So it's all of these formula involve rotating a piece and then putting all the other bits back into the same position so that you don't foul up the entire thing. And you just repeat that, eventually you get to the point. But it is, if you look it up, for every single possible, I need to move this tile to here, there's a formula for it that's like, rotate this one clockwise, turn it this point to that way, click, clack, clack, and you're done. So if you can memorize that formula, you can solve the Rubik's Cube very quickly. So when you see those guys who go and then slap it on that little mat that perfectly times when they sort of have done
it. Oh, man.
It's just that they've memorized the formula. It's not like they're solving a crossword.
Between being trained to do something and casually learning it. I think that if you casually picked up a Rubik's Cube and you started playing with it and you started trying to figure it out, I think you would start to realize these formula, you know, the pins on the crazy ball would come together and you'd be like, oh, okay, now that's how I get this thing
right
to here, and that's a useful thing to know,
right?
And I think that I think that a lot of that stuff has been understood and you can teach it to someone, and they will get a real step forward in advance. I think it's the same to some extent with chess. I mean, I'm quite interested in chess, but I feel like you still do see young chess people come along.
Yeah.
I mean, Magnus Carlsen, I guess, recently a good example of someone who's relatively new to the chess world. Even now, even though he's like probably like getting on for our age, but he's like someone who, you know, almost like, you know, you thought back in the day with these Russian masters and stuff. You know, this is back when people were very smart. People were going to the moon and working out very complicated maths and, you know, building nuclear power plants. You know, it's not like we didn't have knowledge of like a very advanced level of mathematics and stuff. And but apparently, you know, you can still get kids today who are coming through and being able to be taught and trained these very high level stuff that people just didn't know back then about chess. You know, it's not. And so I think, like, in a sense, like what I'm trying to say is that we're able to teach kids nowadays. It's not that we're teaching them more, it's that we're teaching them better.
Yeah.
Because we have more knowledge of the game.
So I've been playing chess on chess.com for about the last year or so.
What's your rating?
I think it's about 1,000.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That's interesting, because I think Dazzles wants to organize like a little chess tournament.
Yeah. My rating has to be like 0. Fuck, I suck so bad at chess.
God, I suck so bad.
Oh my God. I had to remove teeth from my mouth to get more dicks into my mouth. I suck that bad at chess.
Like. Wow.
Oh my God.
Just bear in mind, though, that honestly, just like I'm talking about the Rubik's Cube and the puzzle element to it, once you learn... Like, there's a guy called Agad Mator who does chess videos on YouTube. You know, he's the guy, you will have seen him. He's like
huge,
very Russian looking.
Hugely successful. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So it's very simple. Before. E5, captures. Yeah, we talked about it before. So if you watch his videos, the opening 20 moves are like, we've seen this before. He says that all the time. Obviously, we've seen this before. Because these are very standard openings. And as with any chess game, the earlier moves are much more repeatable and predictable and the same. And you can... look at many, many, many games that have this style of opening and this style of response to that opening, and they play out very similarly. And it's not until like move 15 or 20 that suddenly you've got a new game, which means we haven't seen this before. Like, this is a sequence and this is a combination of pieces in play that we have not seen before, and we can look at the records of games and say, nope, that's not one that has come up. Or if it has, it's rare to have these pieces in this sequence and all the rest of it. Because mathematically, there are so many possible chess games. It's insane. It's actually insane how many possibilities of game there are. So what makes chess interesting is when you get to the point where you're like, yep, I am familiar with all this so far. Someone does a move that you possibly haven't seen before. And at that point, the chess actually begins. So the main thing to learn early on is these openings. What are the standard opening moves? And you're basically, what my friend Ashwin said to me, you're waiting for your opponent to make a mistake and for you to spot that mistake and exploit it. And at that point, the game starts to tip in your favor. And then it's about you making less mistakes than them. That's person versus person chess. It's not about some brilliant Queen's Gambit play. Yeah. It's basically, can you make fewer mistakes? Because that's most people are going to make a mistake at some point, which is why playing against a computer, which is all I do, I hate playing against people. Playing against a computer, the computer will make the same moves over and over again.
Sure.
And you can predict the moves it's going to make, and it doesn't make mistakes very
often. But then, I mean, if you just practice against the computer in like a safe place, you just get better though, right? Like you think
I don't think you
more,
do. I don't think
you'd
you
be
do.
Able and to I, process I, moves faster.
I mean, that it helps, and you definitely start to see patterns. Like, you know what a fork is in chess?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you can, like, it's mainly with a knight, where you move a knight into a position where you're threatening two pieces and he has to choose, and you're going to get one of those pieces regardless because he has to choose between two. He can't save them both. He can't capture your knight. So if you get the best fork is when you get like his queen and his king.
Yeah.
So he has to move the king and you get the queen with the knight. That's like a fork. So looking for those is a pattern. Looking for revealed attacks. So you move a piece to threaten one piece, and it's revealed behind that is another piece that threatens a different piece. Those are the things, the patterns you start to recognize, and you see them coming. So that's good. But the computer isn't great to play against compared
to
people.
The human brain is amazing at what it can watch out for and see and remember and realize and also kind of see at a glance. Maybe even like stuff like apparently a lot of Magnus Carlsen's play is very intuitive, and it's very much like...
He plays fast as well.
It's weird to say that, right? But it's intuition from experience. So it's like something that it's like that, the gut feeling of a detective. I never really put like a lot of stock in it before. I was always like, gut feeling, surely you should just go with your brain.
Right.
But actually, like, they've experienced these things so many times, or been in such similar situations, or they've met someone and something was off, you know, and they just know like that there's something going on here. And sometimes they're wrong. And, you know, sometimes it was the wrong decision. And
it's called playing a hunch, chief. Listen to me, McGarnacle. Your hunches cost the city millions of dollars last week when you destroyed a downtown city center. Listen to me, Chief. I get results, and my gut's telling me the Mendoza did it.
I love the bit. I love the bit when I can't remember like the full line, but when he's like, "We found Timmy dead in a ditch."
I'm trying to eat my lunch.
Listen, McGarnacle.
Listen, McGarnacle. I hope you're happy with yourself.
And then Homer's like, because he gets results, you stupid chief.
Oh my God.
We are of an age where that era of The Simpsons is all that's imprinted on a good percentage of my brain. Everything that happens, I run it through that filter.
Some of the lines from peak Simpsons, that was.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
which
was
so the first 10 years.
Yeah,
of the
first
Simpsons,
10 years,
right?
Of The Simpsons were definitely.
And here's the thing, I was looking at, because they've done all these fucking, you know, the best shows ever and all that kind of crap. They do that over this period. And because I was ill, I was watching a couple of those. The number of shows that ran for 10 years, or just around 10 years, Friends ran for 10 years, Frasier ran for 10 years, Seinfeld ran for 10 years. These were shows that they did 10 years.
Yeah.
And that was like, you think of them, they seem to be there for ages, and then they stopped and they did all these episodes, but they stopped because 10 fucking years is enough. The Simpsons is now
time,
what? 30 years or something stupid like that?
Yeah.
For the love of God, stop.
Yeah.
Stop. You
same voice
stopped
actors
at
for the most part. Same, like, the, all
so
the characters
dead.
Are just like in this time vacuum.
Oh,
like, it's
just stop.
Well, that's the thing. They are in this time vacuum. So the, bizarrely, I read this thing about how The Simpsons is now aspirational, right? That it's a man being able to support a whole family and have a house in a nice place.
Despite being useless at his job. He's never been fired unless he... And then, Homer's been fired a bunch of times and always gets rehired.
But he has a union job, remember? He has a good union who's
He's been
sort
fired
of
a bunch of times.
Him. Yeah. I don't know, like, I read this whole article about how the new series has started this year and it's something which is so detached from reality, because it used to be this thing where, you know, in the post-Reagan years, there was this kind of feeling that the middle class was being squeezed.
Yeah.
And that, you know, Homer had to take a second job as a mall Santa or a plowman or whatever.
Post-Reagan
to kind of make ends
and
meet.
Actual Reagan years as well, middle class got fucked over.
And, you know, by now, you know, it's completely different, you know, for someone trying to, you know, support a family.
Yeah,
with
Homer's
a single...
actually got it made, which is in the Frank Grimes episode where he goes around there and he assesses, like, Homer's life. He sleeps at work. Everybody just kind of lets him float by.
Yeah.
He has this huge house.
Yeah.
And Frank Grimes works his balls off and got all these qualifications and has a terrible time of it. For me, I thought that represented the writer's awareness about the fact that, why the fuck is Homer being seen as a punchline here? He's actually got it made compared to so many other people. But then they just ignored that. And now it's just like, The Simpsons are going to Brazil and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
I just think you should
That's
have stopped.
What the show's become, right? It's always
it's
like...
It's awful.
Oh,
which
let's...
celebrity can we shoehorn in this week?
But it's always awful. Like... I mean, maybe I'm getting this wrong, but I kind of dislike the whole, like, American view on the world, like, through their, like, culture and media sort of thing. And The Simpsons does that... sort of in a bad way, right? Like, The Simpsons go to Japan and it's like, wow, Japan is so weird. It's not like America. And like, and that's the whole joke. And it's just like, okay, that's not actually funny at all. It's just kind of dumb. Like, it's, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but like, The Simpsons has always sort of rubbed me the wrong way in that sense. You know what I mean? Like, it's just,
And any show, any American show, they always have, like you said, we're going to X country.
Yeah.
And whenever
and it's
they
just
do,
like,
it's
do they
death.
Just roll out like a gigantic moving van filled with stereotypes, like very
exactly
common
right. yeah.
stereotypes. And it's just.
It's a very easy, a fun one to do, though.
It's not
do you
fun.
Know what I mean? To go
it's
to Canada,
awful.
To go
it's
to
just,
England.
Yeah,
they went to England,
dumb.
Didn't they?
Yeah.
And
it's lazy.
Yeah, and the queen is fucking in a red phone box and everybody's teeth are all like weird and stuff. And it's just like, it's all the stereotypes, right? And it's like, all right.
It writes itself, though, right? I think when you're writing a series of The Simpsons every year and you've got 25 episodes to do and you're like, fuck it, what shall we do?
Exactly.
Send her to England.
Exactly.
Send her to Japan.
Yeah.
He loses his job.
Yeah.
He gets a new job as this Christmas one. You know what I mean? Like they smash him out and have
it's
to do it.
They should have stopped 20
worth.
Years ago.
Yeah.
They should have done.
Yeah.
But then again, other things have risen in its place, you know. I mean, Family Guy was the original one that sort of took over.
And it was awful. Man.
And other people trod on their toes, didn't they, really, in terms of trying to represent something more realistic. Or not realistic in a sense, or more time appropriate for like what people are experiencing in the here and
I
now.
Guess.
Guys, I just want to say today has been great. What a roller coaster. Good news, bad news,
I know.
Ranting. We got a couple of dick jokes in there as well. I mean, actually, to close out 2020, this has been a like a buffet of Triforce, hasn't it? We've had a little bit of everything.
Yeah. We've talked about stuff we spoke about before.
Yeah.
We've had some personal news.
Yeah.
We've had some, like you said, good, bad. We talked about good, video games a bit.
Just good podcasting.
Yeah. Just good old-fashioned Triforce.
Just good old-fashioned podcasting.
Listen, time changes. Time passes.
Time
passes. World is a confusing and scary place. We don't know what's coming in the future.
And the universe presents
we
itself.
Are here, unchanging and unmodified.
That's
from
right.
the original.
Hey, guess what? Guess what crack pipe I smoked last night? Tarkov. Right back
oh
in, baby.
Oh, my God, dude. Did I did as well the other day. Geez. What a miserable experience.
Oh, man. What a game, though. Fuck me. I think Tarkov should get Game of the Year 2020, 2019, 2018,
list,
2017. It's so fucking good.
It made me so sad to play it again.
Oh,
I played it again,
great,
and everything that happened, I died. Over
just
and over
that
again.
Thrill after a reset of putting, like, a key in your ass pouch or like a paracord or something, like, oh man, it's just so good. That hit
I didn't achieve a thing. I spawned in, and as usual I shot at a couple of people and then instantly died.
Yeah,
I felt instantly outgunned. I felt that every single person I played against was much better than me.
Yeah,
so I just stopped. That, and
it's like chess, though. You don't want to play chess
Tarkov,
against other people,
baby.
Exactly. I was just not in the mood.
No,
I went back to Dota. I played so much Dota over the last few
days.
Oh,
nice.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, that's good. That's
new
good.
Patch and everything came out. And
well,
new hero.
Make the most of your holidays, guys.
Yes.
And have a lovely new year.
Happy
new year. We'll talk next week about
see you guys next year.
Yeah.
I'll play some more weird games. All right. Cheers.
To you guys.
Happy new year.
Happy
to
new
you
year's
all.
Chat.
Happy new year to everyone.
We'll see you on the other side.
Love you lots.
Bye-bye.
Bye.